Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today. We have a loaded show for a Monday. As you can expect, when you have as many Big 12 games in action as we did this past weekend. And I am joined, as I always am on Mondays, to recap the weekend that was, Andy Mitz.
How's it going? It's great to be back.
Andy, I appreciate you pulling yourself away from the Chiefs game for this. I mean, priorities are obviously this, and then the Chiefs, and then, you know, everything.
Look,
else.
I've just built it into my psyche over the last year or so that I have to do this at a specific time every Sunday night. So I'm following the game on my computer here. So, you know, if you guys see me on video go absolutely berserk, it means something really good happened. So.
Or if Andy just likes spaces, we know what's going on. Jamie, a.k.a. JSJ Steyer.
JSJ Steyer. That's another layer. That's a lot going on there. Yes, it's good to be back. It's good to be back on a Cyclone victory. I needed both recovery time, and also I forgot I was going to say something last week. But, you know, here we are. We're back. We're ready to go.
You're coming off a nice win. It's a nice win. It's an easy bounce back. So this is just the rule is we're all just going to skip whatever week our team loses.
I
get basically the rest of the season off?
Yeah, Andy, Andy's retiring.
We'll see Andy in 2022, folks. Thanks a bunch. So we're going to get to the games that happened this weekend, obviously, and kind of look ahead to the week that is going to be here and a few other things as well. But I want to start... I really want to make sure that we are spending time. I know that they're not going to get here till 2023. So I'll be honest, that's the year. But it is kind of fun to put some emphasis and focus on the four teams that will be joining the Big 12 here in a couple of years. Of course, that is Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, and UCF. And we'll talk about how they performed on Saturday as well. It's what we're going to do on the reg. But I want to start bringing on guests, at least for the next few weeks, to kind of just start talking about these teams, getting ourselves familiar. Because I think, you know, we know the Big 12 well. This is a conference that we've all been fans of for some time. We know it fairly well. And I know a decent amount about at least a couple of the schools coming in. I know some of the jokes that poked at some of the schools coming in. But I really want to take the opportunity to get to know our new neighbors. They're joining the family. This is like the engagement period, right? Jamie, you're very familiar with this. You're engaged. You're not married yet. So it's like you're part of the family, but you could still screw it up and not be. So be very careful. That feels appropriate. So today we're going to kick things off.
Who gets the ring? Am I being slipped to the host?
That is the voice of Sam Raz, host of the Scott and Hallman podcast, PAWD cast. Sam, welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be part of this new family here. I guess in our engagement as college football fans here.
It seems like the right, yeah, it seems like the right way to describe it. It's like we're engaged, you know. The wedding's a few years off because it's going to take us a while to get it figured out. It's like you got married and you're engaged in college, but your parents aren't going to let you get married until you graduate and you're just sophomores. So we got
exactly
to go.
I highly recommend taking a hot second between getting engaged and married, whether we're using an analogy for sports or real life, frankly. Yeah.
Enjoy engagement. Enjoy being married for a minute before you start having kids. Enjoy moments in life before you feel like I have to do it all. Like, you got a while. I mean, maybe not.
Man, but who knew that the 10-12 podcast was a life advice podcast?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying I would take any of our life advice, but we're going to offer it whether you want it or not. Sam, as I mentioned, the host of the Scott and Hallman podcast, which is honestly the best Houston Cougars podcast that I have found. And I mean that for quite some time. So very excited to have Sam on the show here with us today. Sam, Houston, one of the four teams joining. I think most people in the Big 12 are most familiar with Houston of the four. I feel like obviously former Southwest Conference members with Baylor and TCU and Texas Tech and Texas. So they, you know, there is a history there. Most of the teams in Big 12, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, have lost a game, if not multiple, to Houston and have faced Houston multiple times. I believe Kansas and Houston have each other on the schedule in the future. Not, I can't remember if that's before the wedding date or if it's after.
It's got to be after.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think it's 23 or 24. I don't have it committed to memory, but it's definitely one of those 2 years. So yeah, I think it's after.
There you go. So, Sam, let's just start from this point. Let's say you were writing a guide to the Houston Cougars. That somebody was going to read to try and figure out what the basic facts is they need to know about Houston. Like, what are just some things you feel like Big 12 fans should know and want to know about this team before they get here?
Houston has spent a lot of its life, I would say roughly, I think this is this year, the school's making a big deal of it. It's the 75th anniversary of U of H doing athletics, because in U of H's early existence, wasn't really an athletics kind of school. It was more of a night school, just to be frank. And I think as much as U of H has grown into, I think, more of a traditional university, and I think those kind of moves on the academic and university side, I think, played a not insignificant part in getting considered now more than 10, 15, 20 years ago. But there's always kind of that, there's always a little bit of a blue collar roots there. U of H started its existence mainly, I think, primarily as an independent. Bill Yeoman running the Veer finally gets invited to the Southwest Conference mid-70s, has a pretty good almost 20-year run there, and then as you guys probably know, did not get invited in 1994 and have spent most of the last 25-ish years kind of on the outside looking in, though with memorable sports seasons, I think, especially in the football, men's basketball side in between. But it's always been kind of a place where you have to innovate, kind of a place where, you know, we've been ahead of the curve at times. You know, I think one of the early adopters of the air raid, the run and shoot, if you want to go back to the early 1990s, Bill Yeoman creating the Veer in the 60s and running that pretty successfully through the 70s and 80s. It's always been a very innovative program. U of H was pretty early to desegregate the Texas schools. I believe U of H was the first major college, although there's some debate between North Texas and us, to desegregate. So it's always been a very innovative school, and it has always been a school kind of striving to be kind of a part of that in-group, and has had some success, but hasn't had maybe as much time to be a part of that in-group. So, you know, maybe a shorter history than some, but a very eventful 75 years of having athletics, to be sure here. Never a dull moment, even if some of the not dull moments aren't exactly positive. You know, certainly 1994 and not getting invited probably falling under that category. That's kind of my macro U of H that's athletics good. In the last 75 years.
By the way, I do need to correct. Actually, Houston and Kansas play in Houston next season.
Oh, wow. They're supposed
to play in Lawrence the season after that, but that's going to turn into a conference game, which means Kansas is going to get to reschedule a non-conference there. But unfortunately, it's the opposite direction where I wanted. I was hoping that Kansas would have the home game first, but oh well.
Houston football, I mean, really, for the last almost two decades now, it's kind of been a place where you've been producing quality head coaches that have gone on to do things elsewhere. Obviously, Dana is kind of the reverse of that at this point in a number of ways. You've had Tom Herman, you had Kevin Sumlin, you had he who shall not be named, who was at a current Big 12 school that should not be allowed to coach anymore, and then some other random guys kind of mixed in between. It feels like Houston's, like, we think of Houston as this really successful football program that's been something of a recognizable brand nationwide since really kind of he who shall not be named showed up in like 2003. I'm not going to use his name. I don't even want to do it. You know, after the Dana Dimmel, which I still don't understand how he got the head UTEP. Anyways, that side gig. Like, yeah. Really, how do you guys view Houston football, and where do you think that those on the outside get it wrong?
I think I think what people get wrong, it's one specific quote, and certainly one that I don't think she expected to get nearly the run it's gotten, but I understand why it's gotten the run it's gotten. In 2014, our current president, someone who I think has played as big of a role on U of H's side of things, like, people are quick to point out, like, Tillman Fertitta, Not gonna go down and open that can of worms, but Renu Kator has done as much to make U of H, you know, go from being a, you know, a school that's had some interesting alumni and, you know, kind of a school with a reputation as a commuter school to this tier one research university. But, you know, she got, you know, on the record saying, you know, we fire coaches for going 8-4, and, you know, I think people have that as kind of as part of the DNA here, and I think that was more of a, you know, an acceptance that, you know, where Houston is right now, which right now was the American Athletic Conference, and right now was at that time being probably the, you know, the highest spending Group of Five program, we expect results here. And I don't know if that's the kind of thing, you know, I'm not going to say that Houston will be happy winning 5 to 7 games, you know, in perpetuity in a tougher football league. I don't think that's the case, but I do think it's a fan base and, you know, and a culture and administration with realistic expectations. But I also think it was a group of people who, you know, were spending a good amount of money. I think the reason why U of H is in the position it's in now is a willingness to, you know, to spend like a Power Five program before getting the invite, a willingness to, you know, build new facilities, even if you don't know that that Big 12 or Pac 12 or insert name of conference here invites coming. That ambition also, you know, that ambition comes with the price of, you know, winning here and, you know, truly performing as this program is supposed to perform as a highly resourced program in, you know, fertile recruiting area against, you know, a league of lesser resource schools. And has it always achieved that? No, it certainly has not. It might not be achieving it this year, which I'm sure we'll get to. But I think that expectation changes somewhat with, you know, with going to the Big 12, with, you know, a basketball slate that I'm sure we'll get to is going to be, you know, a lot more exciting, a lot more, you know, brutal than what we've been seeing in the American Athletic Conference, and certainly a higher caliber football product. So I guess I would say what people get wrong is that, you know, this is a program that is perpetually too, you know, too big for its own britches, that thinks it's, you know, God's gift to football, expects to be going 12-0 every year. And it's like, no, I think the expectation was with what U of H has paid recently and put in terms of, you know, in-game facilities and also just the peripherals that, hey, you know, you need to be good against group of five competition, you know, or else. And I think when you're spending the way U of H has spent in the league, U of H has spent, and I think that's a fair expectation. And I think that's some context that people don't have when they just hear the, you know, oh, we fire coaches to go 8-4. And it's like, who are these crazy people? Also, people misunderstand that Major Applewhite was remotely capable of running a Division I program, which he was not. And that is the end there.
Yeah, he was not ideal. I think sometimes quotes sound really good when you prepare them.
Oh yeah,
they don't come across the way you were hoping when they're executed.
Oh yeah.
And no, Applewhite was, yeah, whatever. Speaking of you know, subpar jobs, Dana currently the head coach at Houston. And I can't imagine he'd be too jazzed about having to go back to the Big 12 again. From Houston's standpoint, you're moving up in competition. It's going to be more money. The opportunity is now here for Houston that they've been trying to get to. We don't know what the playoffs are going to look like in a few years, but we all expect it's going to expand. And I still think that 12-team genie is out of the bottle. That's not one you're going to be able to shove back into easily. I mean, for Houston, how does this affect his job? Does it put more pressure to get things going more quickly, or does this... Is that pressure already there and it doesn't matter? This has nothing to do with it. It's purely a matter of, hey, Dana, this ain't good.
I think the pressure is already there. I wouldn't say the Big 12 thing doesn't matter. And by the way, he got a $1 million bonus for us getting that Big 12 invite. So no, he's sitting pretty on that one. But no, I think it's relevant. And I think it certainly helps the financial situation. I think obviously a lot of what's going to Dana is private money. You know, we're not taking big bushels of money earmarked for the mathematics college or science and research and dumping it into a big plastic box for Dana Holgorsen. But you know, that private money isn't at the level of the school in Austin or, you know, Bama or Florida or, you know, on down the list. It is more limited here than at a school like that. And I think having additional Big 12 revenue, whatever that might be, whatever smaller slice of the pie we might get the first couple of years in the league, is still a sizable upgrade over what we would have gotten as an AAC member. And I think maybe it adds more pressure to him because there's more money in the banana stand to pay that buyout. But in terms of like what fans expect, no, I think it was, hey, you need to have a conference championship contender by year four, and by year three, the current year, have a team that looks like it's one of the three or four best in the American Athletic Conference. That was the expectation. I don't think the Big 12 invite or not Big 12 invite really changed that.
If I have his contract, his buyout accurate, it's they would have to pay him $7.1 million if they were to fire him in 2021. That drops to $2.5 million next year and $1 million in 2023. So the issues of whether or not they can afford to do so will drastically decrease by next year. That's going to make a big impact. Let's talk about basketball for a minute. I love the KenPom showcase, the rankings for all the conferences, I think from 2014 through like last year. The Big 12 was number one by a large margin, current Big 12 as it stands. And you moved the numbers around to show this is how things are now, and this is how things would be with the new lineup of teams, both in the Big 12 and the SEC. OU, the Big 12 was number one. They stayed number one. Now the gap shrank, but they were still, according to KenPom numbers, the best basketball conference in the country, top to bottom, with OU and Texas leaving and the four teams who are coming in. I love college basketball. Houston is quite good. I think it's a great addition. But I am curious, how long is Kelvin going to be around to keep things rolling the way they are?
Kelvin is as engaged in the program as I've ever seen him. I know maybe his first few years, that was more just, you know, the difficulty he was still working through playing in a ancient, just terrible, decrepit, wonderful historic facility, the Hoffman's Pavilion was. He was playing in one of the 50 worst Division I arenas out there. He got practice facilities. It was kind of rough. And now he's got a state-of-the-art arena. He's had the practice facilities. The program's already recruiting like a 12 or like an ACC member. In fact, just on Friday, we got the number 40 prospect, according to 247 in the class of 2022, Terrence Arsenault. He verbaled to the Cougars. So he's already recruiting at that level. I think he's really excited. This is the most relaxed I've seen him in an off season in a while. And you would think coming off a Final Four, coming off Houston's, you know, first Final Four since Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler and the like were playing, that, you know, you would feel kind of the pressure and stuff. And I think if anything, he's very relaxed. He feels very secure about the team he's had. So, you know, the guy's age is definitely a factor. I remember telling people a couple of years ago, whenever was convinced after we went to the Sweet 16, that, you know, insert name of SEC program, whoever was going to hire Kelvin Sampson. I just said, you know, if he was 10 years younger, I would be very, very concerned about this. But, you know, at his age, with his kids both, you know, coaching for him, with him liking living in Houston, I saw him retiring here and he ended up signing the extension here. And I think he's got a minimum 5 or 6 more years in him without a health scare. He really likes it. I think my biggest concern it's not really a concern, because I think Kelvin running the shows is still going to be a really good team. But his son, Kellen, is the head coach in waiting, has been an incredible recruiter. Basically, every big recruit of the last 4 or 5 years, you know, Kellen Sampson got him to U of H, and Kellen Sampson was also one of the first people to offer him. He's just very, very good on the talent ID side, of a guy who's already shown himself capable of doing the face of the program kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe if he sees it as a situation where either Kellen's going to get a big job or Kellen's going to take over him, he might step aside. But I don't know. I see him here for another 4 or 5 years. He's really happy with what he's got here. He's on about the coldest seat in the country. You know, if U of H has a down year, no one's going to be for Kelvin Sampson this year. But U of H isn't going to have a down year, because he's had stuff given to him, rightfully so, that no U of H basketball coach since Guy B. Lewis got here.
Yeah, look, Big 12 hasn't have a great history of son coach in waitings in the past, so we'll see how that one works. Let's wrap up on this, Sam. With football, men's basketball, those are the things that everybody talks the most about. Those are the things, you know, football drives the bus, men's basketball is number two. What other sports are the ones at Houston that are going to be able to contribute to the conference the strongest?
Cougar track and field has a great history. Carl Lewis, the many, many, many time Olympian, is an assistant track coach. He's gone on our show a few times. Humble brag, humble brag, humble brag. But U of H, I think the year Texas Tech won the outdoor championship 2019, I was actually in Austin for that one. U of H was third on the men's side, regularly is a competitor for individual national championships, especially on the sprint side. Baseball program has a good history. The last few years have been rough, but U of H had a real good five season stretch from about 2014 to 2018, where the program was quite good. Todd Whitting, the coach from that era, is still around, but I think he's kind of struggled to find the assistant coaches, as some of his best guys have gotten poached by bigger money programs, has struggled a little bit more. But the Cougars have good baseball not only resources, but history as well. Softball, I would say as a solid history. I know the Cougs have gone to the Super Regionals a couple times. I want to say the last time we went to the Supers, OSU eliminated us, but don't quote me on that. I could be mixing up years. I know one of our best pitchers of all time, Amanda Crabtree, was actually an Oak State transfer. I'm trying to think of what else. Swimming and diving is coming off 5 straight conference titles. Auburn actually just hired away our coach to go run their program. Ditto for Texas A&M and women's golf. So a lot of success at U of H outside of football, men's basketball. Obviously, you're going into a league where almost across the board it's going to be a lot more difficult, but not going to be a program that I think kind of lacks outside of those big sports. That's kind of my big criticism of Memphis. Whenever people talk about Memphis as a big ad, it's just like, okay, they've had the football success. I know football drives the bus, but they are so, so, so bad at anything that's not named football. And I'm including Penny Hardaway in that joke men's basketball program too, but I will leave that aside. But that's my elevator pitch for Cougar non-football and basketball sports that somehow got into Memphis, and I'm sorry that I took that detour.
Very nice. Sam, you've been awesome. Really appreciate your time tonight. Do me a favor. Where can everybody check out the work that you do cover in the Houston Cougars?
Yeah, the best place to find us. Obviously, we are on all places that have podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Just search the Scott and Holman Podcast, PAWDcast, SCOTTHOLMAN. We are on Twitter at SHPAWDcast. And like once a month, we post on Facebook. I wouldn't really recommend anyone go on Facebook, but if you do, we are on there and you could just search the Scott and Holman podcast there, but a little more active on Twitter. And obviously wherever you get podcasts.
Don't recommend you going on Facebook. It's pretty much a good tried and true rule for just
doing. I was going to say that comment alone made me absolutely love the fact that Sam is, you know, and
hey,
he's going to be joining the Big 12. So,
hey,
Sam, good stuff, man. Guys. Yeah, dude. Appreciate it again. And welcome to the Big 12, bud.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me.
College football season is here and no tailgate is complete without a grill. And no grill is complete without Gridiron Metalworks. Go to Gridiron Metalworks, find collegiate branded grill grates and griddles with actual school logos, as well as other awesome metal goods like flower pots, stainless steel bookends, coasters, and can coolers, among other things, all in actual school colors, not just the, yeah, it's pretty close like you'll find at other places. Grilling at the game this Saturday? Sear your steak, burgers, brats, or veggies with the perfect Pistol Pete, Baylor Bear, or Kansas Jayhawk grill marks. They've got grill grates and griddles for all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. Plus, these are the perfect gift for the hard to shop for. We can almost guarantee you'll find something from Gridiron that someone on your holiday shopping list does not have. These are high quality, custom cut, and made in the USA. And as someone who enjoys turning on the grill during the fall, during football season, during basketball season, and as someone who is a diehard Oklahoma State fan, yeah, an Oklahoma State griddle for my grill, fantastic. Right now, when you use the promo code 1012, that's T-E-N, the number 12, T-E-N-1-2, you'll get 15% off your first purchase. And all orders over $100 get free shipping. So whether you're looking for a Kansas State grill grate, a West Virginia griddle, or a unique metal home good for your college football, college sports collection, visit gridironmetal.com. Use the promo code 1012 for 15% off your first order. You can also find the link in our show notes. Gridiron Metalworks for the college super fan.
Your home for everything Kansas Jayhawks is the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Metz, and every week we run through the most important stories for all your favorite Kansas programs, whether it's football, soccer, or tennis, volleyball or basketball, baseball and softball, or any other Jayhawk competition, we have it. We have game previews and recaps, interviews with coaches and others close to the team, and analysis from those who pay close attention to all of these programs. You can find us by searching for Rock Chalk Podcast on your favorite platform, so start listening today.
Thanks again to Sam. Really appreciate that. I'm pumped to do this, pumped to meet our new teams coming in. We've got some guests lined up for the other three over the next few weeks. I say next few weeks, like not in a row, like over the next month and a half, we'll sneak those in. We got a lot to get to here today. We've got a lot to get to. And I want to start, I don't want to just recap every game. Let's do this. Let's do a little scoreboard looking and at least touch on the games that I don't feel like we need to spend a lot of time on for a variety of reasons. Number one, Texas, congratulations, bouncing back from their loss to Arkansas by curb stomping the Rice Owls 58-0. Casey Thompson, 15 of 18, 164 yards and two touchdowns. Like, everyone looked good for Texas. It was a nice win. I'm not sure how much to really take away from it because, again, Rice is bad. They're 0-3 and quite 0-3. And, you know, if we want to do transitive property stuff, which doesn't make any sense, Texas beat Rice by more than Arkansas did, but Arkansas beat Texas. So this is why transitive property stuff doesn't really work. Congrats to Texas. Texas Tech 54, Florida International 21. It was close early. Like, I was a little bit nervous you're about to have a repeat of week two against their FCS team. But Texas Tech put it on 28 points in the second quarter and then just ran away with it. Tyler Shuck looked pretty good. And I think as long as his offensive line can keep him upright and protect him, he's going to have a really nice season. And Texas Tech has a higher ceiling than I thought they did coming into the year. They're 3-0 now. So that Tech bet's not looking very good for Daniel. But that's all right. Money's going to a good cause. Iowa State 48, UNLV 3. If you stayed up for this one, I think the only takeaway I came away from it was that Marcus Arroyo and UNLV have had the top recruiting class in the Mountain West for the past 2 years since he got there, which is really interesting to me. Marcus Arroyo, keep an eye on him. Congrats to Iowa State, another bounce back win. I'm sure Iowa State fans had a lot of fun in Vegas. Had a lot of fun in Vegas. James is laughing.
They did.
Yes, they did. I know several who absolutely had a spectacular time.
My parents went. They had a great time. They celebrated my dad's birthday late.
That's good. That's very nice. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, that's one of the best places to do it, yeah. Too.
They so. Didn't take me, but I'm not bitter. It's fine.
Not at all.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to say this here. I've never been to Vegas.
Me neither. So no, I'm not upset.
Oh, good. None of us have. This is
oh boy,
beautiful. Hey,
just add it to the turning. Things that I would say. Just add it to the things that people are going to blast the podcast for. That's right? We've never been to Vegas.
Our first 10-12 network board meeting. Is that what we got? Is that meeting of the in-person meeting of the minds?
Oh my gosh.
Tax deductible or something. That's a write off.
There we go.
I think I had to like make this an actual business first, and not just a bunch of people who all like mention each other.
Yeah.
How much are they going to check anyway?
The
IRS doesn't listen to the podcast.
I'm going to put Jamie Steyer on everything. congrats, JSJ. Yeah. Okay. Those aside, let's talk about three games in particular that I have grouped together as disappointing or unsatisfactory victories. And I know it seems in poor taste to be like you won, and that's all that matters, right? All that matters is winning. It's all anyone cares about. At the end of the day, you move on. We got a W. Our record looks good. But you also kind of come away from it going, it doesn't necessarily make you feel like all great for the rest of the season moving forward. Let's start with Oklahoma and Nebraska. OU 23, Nebraska 16. It was another performance from Spencer Rattler, which it seems like he's in a bit of a sophomore slump. I don't know. I will chalk up a lot of this to the fact that basically Lincoln Riley was playing uber conservative. Like, it's what it felt like. That's how it seemed. It didn't seem like they were trying to blow them out of the water, which was very interesting. One interesting note for me is Oklahoma. Since the 2015 season started, Oklahoma is 9-15 now against the spread when they are a 20-35 point favorite. That includes Saturday's game, which is the fifth in a row that they did not cover. Now, they are 21-3 in those 24 games, so they win them. But I don't know what it is, Vegas and making OU a massive favorite. Like, they probably shouldn't anymore. I don't get it. I think my problem with Oklahoma is this. We gave them the pass in week one with Tulane. It was a weird game. They weren't supposed to be at home. There wasn't even a full stadium. Tulane had a lot to play for. Didn't think they would, but they did. You blew out Western Carolina. Who cares? You play this game, the game that all this drama has been built around because Nebraska didn't want to play it, and it's 11 a.m., and that's the reason the Big 12 is falling apart. Kidding. It's the 50th anniversary of the game of the century or whatever the thing is called. And you're sitting there late in the game like you did against Tulane, and Nebraska has an opportunity to maybe, like, win. or tied up. And I just, for a team that we all had, or at least myself and a lot of people were like, yeah, national championship game. Into the playoff again. There's a shoe in. And I think this year they're actually going to win their first playoff game. Been really lackluster performances against teams that you should not have had lackluster performances against.
Yeah, this screams to me of Oklahoma knowing that people are not going to write them off the same way that they do other potential title contenders or playoff contenders. Because look, we ragged on Iowa State for their, you know, their UNI barely win there. And, you know, the thought process was, well, if you beat Iowa, no one's really going to care. And Iowa was a much, much better team than Nebraska was. Oklahoma, yes, they haven't lost yet, but they've looked bad in two of their games. And I say bad relative to like our standards, like what we expect of them. They did not look good in this game at all. They were able to pull out enough, but Nebraska was playing way above what you expected Nebraska to. And it took some super spectacular play by Oklahoma late down the stretch to keep Nebraska from coming back and tying that game and sending it to overtime. Like this was absolutely Oklahoma laying down, and I'm going to call them out on it because they cannot continue to do this, especially as we get into Big 12 play, and expect to just walk through the conference, which is what they're going to have to do in order to make the playoff. Because the national perception of the Big 12 at this point is rightly or wrongly way down from what it was previously. So it's not like you can take a Big 12 loss and feel super comfortable about being able to make the playoff over some of these, it's especially with the way that the Pac-12 has gotten a big shot in the arm from Oregon beating Ohio State. Like, you have to go out and impress. This was your opportunity to go out and just lay waste to a Nebraska team that nobody really thinks is any good. And, you know, you let them stay in that game. You let everybody wonder what the heck is going on with your team. And so they're going to have to go and beat the brakes off of everybody from this point forward, I think, to get back that benefit of the doubt. And look, if we're going to talk about Iowa State not being as impressive as they needed to be in the first 2 weeks of the season, then we have to do the same to Oklahoma here, because they should have been a whole lot more impressive in this win. They should have been a whole lot more impressive in that opening week win as well. So, like, I still think that they can get it turned around, and we've seen them do that. But for whatever reason, like, there was absolutely no reason. They had all the motivational reasons they needed to just go out and stomp Nebraska into dust, and they didn't do it. Which makes me wonder, what is going on with this team? Why are they not getting up for this game that they should have gotten up for and they should have put on a show?
Yeah, I'm the first to say, like, you can't judge off week one. You can start making some judgments week two, you know. And I think that there are a lot of question marks of, you know, what really happened in that game, because I don't think that the answer is that Nebraska is a lot better than they've been given credit for. Maybe some, maybe a little bit, but I don't think that it all comes down to that. And so, I don't know. Yeah, you'd think that there would have been incentive to really go there and be ready for it. But, I mean, a win is a win. But, yeah, you've got to be more convincing than that long term to really prove that you are who everyone was saying you are preseason. But at the end of the day, you come out of there with a win. And if you go out there and you do have really convincing wins, you kind of put it in the rearview mirror, but you've got to have those convincing wins still.
The thing that I'm kind of concerned about, because this is what we see from Texas all the time, but right? Like they have a whole bunch of talent. They should be a whole lot better than a lot of teams that they play, but they play down to the level of their competition. They don't seem to take most of their games seriously unless it's like playing against an FCS opponent type of thing. And everybody wonders what goes on with Texas. And we're starting to see Oklahoma, for whatever reason, do a similar sort of thing where they don't seem to necessarily be taking all their opponents seriously or putting on the show and getting the style points, you know, that they need to be able to make sure that they're going to be in that college football playoff conversation there. And like, I don't know what it is. It's just, it reminds me a lot of what we see from Texas all the time. And I don't like it, especially since Oklahoma is supposed to be the flagship of the Big 12 this year.
Yeah. Crazy interception in the fourth quarter. I thought it was funny that Lincoln Riley Page was like considered debating it or challenging it just because it was a fourth down play and moved. Oklahoma got the ball at the 3 instead of their own 24, which was funny. But man, that interception was insane. DJ Graham. Oof, oof, wild catch. Speaking of disappointing wins, Oklahoma State 21, Boise State 20. For those who didn't stay up late to watch this one, the halftime score in this game, in case you're curious, was Oklahoma State 21, Boise State 20. No one scored a point in the second half. There was a missed field goal and a blocked field goal, that blocked field goal being the one that helped Oklahoma State maintain their one-point lead and victory. That and a massive third-down catch from former walk-on receiver Cale Cabanis, who also happens to be the grandson of former Oklahoma men's basketball head coach Billy Tubbs. Yeah, welcome to, yeah, weird stuff. Oklahoma State finally figured out how to run the ball. Jaylen Warren is RB1 for Oklahoma State now. He's locked that job down. He was fantastic. Oklahoma State won despite completing just 6 passes. The offensive line was better than it was the first couple weeks. Spencer Sanders was not great. They obviously did not want to throw the ball all that much, as they didn't throw them all that much in the game. There's a weird balance of, like, I get the excuse and the comment about the wide receivers. You had out that night, Tay Martin, your elder statesman, Jaden Bray, talented freshman, Braden Johnson, your other older guy, Langston Anderson, your other older guy. Basically, all you had left were a bunch of true freshmen and sophomore receivers. And they were fine. They were okay. And obviously, OSU doesn't trust them, which isn't shocking. OSU never trusts young players that much. The defense did it again. They held Boise State without a point for the final 40 minutes and 7 seconds of that game, which is insane. I think my point with Oklahoma State at this point is their defense is as good as their offense is bad. And I don't know how many games you can win that way, but it's not going to be as many as Oklahoma State fans hope for.
Yeah, all I'm going to say there, Philip, is you're welcome, by the way, because I literally tuned in. I tuned into the, okay. So 10-12, you know, text message chain, Philip was talking about how he didn't want to be on the podcast today because Oklahoma State was playing so bad. And so I tuned in to figure out what exactly he was talking about, just to see for myself how bad it was. And from I literally tuned in right after Boise State kicked their last field goal to go up 20-7. And then, you know, they started playing well. So, you know, you're welcome, Philip, that apparently me watching Oklahoma State is what it takes for Oklahoma State to play well this year, which means that I don't know what I'm going to do for that Kansas game, because maybe I need to not watch and for them to actually have a chance. But regardless, I agree with you that Oklahoma State overloads with the run, but they have, you know, good running backs that allow them to do that. And that's what make their offense go for whatever reason. Like, you have to think that at some point it's going to come back to bite them and that they can't get the passing game going. But it's also kind of one of those things where, you know, why stop running when they can run as efficiently as they did? And it seemed like they shot themselves in the foot a few times, you know, maybe trying to go away from the run when they didn't necessarily need to, and Boise State was letting them have it. So it's definitely something that needs to get fixed. It's something that they need to figure out, because you're right, especially in the Big 12, you're not going to be able to go the entire season only throwing, you know, 10 passes in an entire game and expect to win. But, you know, I don't really know what Oklahoma State's supposed to do at this point. I don't know if it's Spencer Sanders is having problems, or if it's receivers aren't getting in good positions for him, or what. Like, they have to figure that out first and figure out what the problem is so that they can actually fix it. But it's a really weird situation for them to be in, where their running game is so much better than anything else that they can do right now that, you know, like, they have to lean on it in order to get wins.
And it was awful for 2 weeks. It was garbage for 2 weeks, and they finally get this going. I'm just going to say, look, I really am trying to be more positive and optimistic and not a negative person, and I don't want to call people's jobs. I don't want to call for, if you're doing a bad job, whatever. We can say someone's on the hot seat, but I don't want to sit here and be like, this person should be fired unless they're doing something like immoral or wrong. But you don't trust the young receivers because Oklahoma State's had a problem for some time. They don't know how to build the offense around the talent they have on the roster. They expect the talent to fit their scheme. It's Gundy's scheme. Everybody has to fit Gundy's scheme. It's why Tyreek Hill was wasted at Oklahoma State. It's why Jelani Woods, tight end, left for Virginia and is now killing it for Virginia. And now you have Brandon Presley, who looks like a Swiss Army knife a la Tyreek Hill could have been, and they don't know how to use him either. Oklahoma State does not know how to build an offense around its talent. and the play calling right now is less than ideal, especially considering all the issues they're dealing with on the offensive line and at receiver. So look, I'm glad they're 3-0. I'm an Oklahoma State fan. It's awesome. It's great. You beat Boise State. Boise State does not lose at home. They do not lose at home. And you beat them on the road in just the weirdest Big Ten game I've ever seen in my entire life. By the way, I'd like to make sure to not join the Big... If that's Big Ten football, no thank you. I'll stay in the Big 12. Thank you very much. I don't care about the money at this point. Jamie, any thoughts?
Not particularly, except for I had the treat of getting to watch part of that game while I was sitting there waiting for the freaking endless overtimes to end so I could watch Iowa State. But
it was the treat is that's a good word. Treat.
Yeah, that was fun. But first of all, like watching Boise State play is always kind of painful because my little brain has trouble discerning the people from the field, and I don't know
the blue how blue.
Anyone does that. Yeah. My eyes aren't that good, so I would be really caught off guard when what I thought was blowing grass came out of nowhere and tackled me personally. I don't really have any other commentary besides that. It's just very confusing for me to watch those games.
Okay, so the other kind of unconvincing win goes to, and look, West Virginia 27, Virginia Tech 21. Congrats to West Virginia winning a rivalry game. This is awesome. They got to go to Virginia Tech next year, so we'll see if they can heap that. What is it? The Black Diamond Trophy? Black Diamond Trophy. Oh, it's probably pop back in my head. Thank goodness. West Virginia led this game 27-7 early in the third quarter and then hung on for the win. A few thoughts. One, that game was the most, like, the best and the worst. It was, like, the best and worst compilation of Jared Agee game possible. They lost the turnover battle 2-0 because he had a fumble and threw an interception. The interception being the one at the end of the game that came right at the West Virginia 17 and set Virginia Tech up, which is needing just 17 yards to be able to take the lead. Take the lead for the game. They were down 6. A touchdown and an extra point gives them the game. Props to the West Virginia defense. Defense in the Big 12 this weekend. Oklahoma State, West Virginia, you guys stand up and be proud. I need to make sure that I give due credit to the person who tweeted this out. So give me 1 second. I know that's really good radio when someone's like, hold on while I ramble because I'm trying to remember who did this thing. Keenan Cummings, shouts to him at Rivals Keenan. I think he's the Rivals guy for West Virginia. By my count, Virginia Tech ran a total of 11 snaps from the West Virginia 10-yard line and in on Saturday. It resulted in 6 yards, 2 turnovers on downs, a missed field goal, and a false start. Props to the West Virginia defense. Jared Dagey tried to give the game away, and the defense stood up and did not let Virginia Tech get that touchdown. Turnover on downs. Incredibly impressive performance. They got that win. I have some quite. It's again. I think Virginia Tech and Oklahoma State have similar situations of like. Oklahoma State and West Virginia have some similar situations of like. They got good defense. I got questions about the quarterback, and I got questions about the offense. And I got questions about the offensive scheme, and I did not coming away from Saturday despite 2 wins feeling overly like more impressed by anything.
Yeah, I mean, West Virginia definitely has an offense problem, which it's weird talking about all of these, you know, Big 12 schools that have issues on offense. But I guess that's where we're at. Big 12 is now a defensive conference, which, hey, I'll take it. I mean, but it's one of those things where, Dagey was like super hot and cold in this game. Like you look at the box score. And, you know, he was 15-25 for 193 yards with 2 touchdowns and an interception, which isn't normally that bad of a line. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. It if you watch the game, which I did, it didn't seem like he did anything that really jumped out to you as, oh my gosh, he's got it figured out. Like, it was a lot of situationally helpful football for him where he was able to get big plays in situations where, like, if he didn't get the big play, I would wonder what the heck was going on. And so it's weird kind of seeing what's going on here. And like, I can't really give him a bunch of credit for this win. Like you said, like it was definitely the defense. there was a lot of opportunity in that second half for him to really put the game away, and he just wasn't able to do any of it. They had so many drives in that second half where they didn't do anything. You know, three plays for -1 yards, a fumble after 29 yards in 8 plays, 3 plays for 5 yards, 3 plays for 0 yards and an interception. Like, they basically did nothing except for a 12-play, 55-yard drive to get a field goal to open up the second half. And the offense just went away entirely. And so I have no idea what's going on there, why it can't be consistent. It is going to come back to bite them at some point if they can't get it figured out, because, again, there's a lot of good defenses in the Big 12 this year. That offense is going to have to do something, because you cannot rely on that West Virginia defense to shut down the opponent every single drive to be able to win you a game in the conference.
Yeah, this isn't a game that I was able to watch very much of, but it's, I don't know. Again, it's one of those things where you get the win. It's a big rivalry game. That's awesome. There's definitely some things left to be desired, but at the same time, I don't know. Me personally, I love a big play. I love a big run. Those like get me so hyped. So I always love anything like that, like from Letty Brown. But I don't know. It's exactly what you're saying, Andy. You just need a little bit more consistency, which absolutely has the potential to occur over the course of the season. Like, absolutely, could their quarterback play get more consistent? Yeah, but it just hasn't quite happened yet.
Baylor 45, Kansas 7. Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this over on the Rock Chalk podcast, but basically, Kansas defense played fairly well for the first half and then couldn't do any. Like, it became really clear in the second half that they weren't going to be able to stay in it because the offense wasn't going to do anything and everything went to crap. Kansas has shown flashes again. You know, it's worth the price of admission just to go watch Jason Bean play, because he is absolutely phenomenal. I wish he wasn't the only guy that really could do anything on offense. Like, I wish they had some other runners that could rush for a decent number of yards. It's worth keeping an eye on Kansas and Baylor. I'm still torn on Baylor because, yes, Baylor was able to bully Kansas using a running attack that, you know, was really well designed to attack what Kansas does. But I do wonder, just with the way that they started as well, did they catch, you know, a Kansas team that just was woefully unprepared for that running attack? Or are they actually that much better than people thought they were going to be coming into the year? I really don't know. The jury's still out on Baylor. We're going to have to find out here pretty quick, but there's still a lot of questions. That game didn't answer any questions for me other than it's like, yeah, Kansas really isn't going to jump up and surprise too many people this year, at least early, because they still have a lot of things they have to figure out, you know, having a coach that was hired like, you know, 20 practices before the season started.
You know what Kansas could use right now, Andy? A little home field magic. It was really good for West Virginia on Saturday. They got that win, and I can't help but think it's because West Virginia gear was released on home field apparel on Saturday, like right at kickoff. Literally, fans are sitting there like watching the game, looking at their phone, typing it in, using the 1012 promo code NETWORK12 to get 15% off their first order. And the West Virginia line is quite good. I really do like it. I'm like, okay, which one do I want to get here? I think I want the West Virginia Mountaineer mascot illustration team. Like, it's a Navy shirt. It's got the Mountaineer inside the state in the goal. It's a really nice t-shirt. And I don't have a lot of like blue t-shirts, and I could use a few more blue. I got a lot of gray. I have way too many gray t-shirts. I could use something like that. If you haven't gone and checked out the West Virginia line yet, what are you doing? By the way, the WVU vintage logo tee, I've never seen that logo before in my life, and it's freaking awesome. And you have to see it. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Check out the West Virginia line. Scroll down to like the second row. It's called WVU Vintage Logo Tee. It's weird and wacky. If I didn't know that that's what it was, I would not figure that out just by looking at it. It's amazing. I got to have that one too. So, Homefield Apparel, who makes the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel you will find anywhere. Promo code NETWORK12, NETWORK12, gets you 15% off your first order. They got West Virginia. They've got Oklahoma State. They've got Iowa State. They've got Texas. They've got Texas Tech. They've got Baylor. They have BYU, in case we have some people listening. They have Houston as well. They have UCF. Figured out, Cincinnati. We already know TCU is coming sometime in the near future or in the future. It's been confirmed by both Homefield Apparel and TCU's athletic director, who apparently is tired of people asking him about Homefield. So, homefieldapparel.com. Promo code Network 12, 15% off your first order. Be rocking the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel you will find anywhere this football season.
Yeah, you know, another one that is fairly appropriate given the way that that game ended is the 2002 West Virginia Black Diamond goal line stand tee, which I will say, there's not very many shirts that look really good with yellow as the base color or gold as the base color, but I'm having a hard time finding one here that doesn't look absolutely phenomenal.
That is appropriate. I feel this literally does feel like home field, like kind of knew it was coming. A little bit of witchcraft there, a little predictive. Home field magic is a real thing, folks. It's a real thing. It helped Oklahoma State over Boise State. They got both. So I'm never sure how that works when it's a... I think the rule from Connor is as long as a home field team wins, then the magic is real. And if home field team loses, well, they must have done something to upset home field and they need to quickly correct it. Other game from Saturday, I don't want to leave out Kansas State. Kansas State 38, Nevada 17. Nevada tied it up in the third quarter. Kansas State put up 21 points in the fourth quarter to win that one pretty handily. I still think Nevada's good. I think Kansas State had a really nice fourth quarter there, able to pull away. I think Kansas State is good. I think their defense was solid. I think Will Howard was better than I thought he would be, but they didn't ask him to do a whole lot through the air. 7 for 10, 123 yards and a touchdown, but 12 carries, 56 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Deuce Vaughn basically did just like everything else. So did Joe Irvin. It was a ground game for Kansas State and solid defense. Not too shocking. I cannot wait to see, and I say this sarcastically, the Big Ten game that's about to break out between Oklahoma State and Kansas State on this upcoming Saturday. We're going to talk about the games that we are excited to see this weekend in just a minute. But from each of you, we're 3 weeks in. Everyone's played 3 games except for TCU because for some reason they love to take their idle weeks early in the season. I don't understand it. So they'll get their 3rd game against SMU this coming Saturday. So I'm curious. One thing that you each feel like you know about the Big 12 or a team in particular at this point today.
I'll go ahead and jump in. The thing that I think I know at this point is that second spot in the Big 12 championship game is wide open. I could make an argument for about 7 different teams right now facing Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. Just based off of what we've seen, like stuff that could really go right for that particular team. And there's not a second team that I look at it and say, oh my gosh, both sides of the ball make me think that they are, for sure going to be there. I can make an argument against Iowa State's offense being bad enough that they can't overcome it and someone else could sneak in. I can make an argument for pretty much every single team except for Kansas, and I'm trying to think of who the other one would be. Maybe Texas Tech. At this point, I don't know that I've seen enough from them, or Baylor. Like, I could say those 3 teams, I could probably pretty safely say there's no way that I see them at this point making it to the Big 12 championship game. But everyone else, I could easily see making it at this point with the right kind of luck going their way or the right bounces.
Yeah, I think that the Big 12 right now, what I know is they've got a ways to go to prove that they're going to make, waves in the postseason. If you want to assume that Oklahoma is going to be your playoff contender, which, fair assumption generally, you have a ways to go before you prove that, first of all, you're going to make it there, and second of all, that you're going to do anything there. So I think that it's more that there's unanswered questions that we thought maybe would be answered by this time that we're just kind of waiting on still.
I think I know that Oklahoma's probably still going to win the Big 12 this year, like we all thought they were, but not in necessarily the way we thought they were. Not because there's a lot of good challengers and they're just so good, but because the rest of the Big 12 is going to have a hard time actually challenging them. And so Oklahoma might not be as good as we thought they were, but is still going to be able to get past everyone and win the conference. Again, I understand Oklahoma has been disappointing through 3 weeks. Like, they lose games when they get upset early in the season. They turn things on late. We see it every year. They'll get things figured out. I will stop giving them the benefit of the doubt when they stop giving me reason to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I don't see anybody in here. I'm like any team in the Big 12 right now, it wouldn't shock me if they were the team that upsets Oklahoma in the regular season. It would not shock me. If you told me Texas Tech was going to do it, okay. If you told me Kansas State was going to do it for the 3rd year in a row, great. If you told me Texas was going to do it, fine. I say everybody, not Oklahoma State, because they can't win Bedlam. But any team in the Big 12, outside of Kansas and OSU, if you told me any of them upset Oklahoma this year in the regular season, I would say, okay, like that's where I'm at. But when it comes to the Big 12 title game, until proven otherwise, like, I just think it's going to be a year where they're going to do it, but mostly because, not because they're awesome, but because I'm everyone else has some major flaws. And I don't love it, but it just kind of is the way it is. Looking around the rest of the quote-unquote Big 12, the teams that we are currently engaged with and not married to, BYU should go ahead and just be crowned the Pac-12 South champ by knocking off the third straight Pac-12 South team, this time knocking off ranked Arizona State. BYU has been impressive. They've beaten Arizona State, and Utah to start the season. They are 3-0 and the only team to be 3-0 in the country with three wins over quote-unquote Power 5 opponents. So props to them. Very impressive on Saturday. Houston beat an FCS team, so that happened. Cincinnati, 3-0, 38-24 win over Indiana. It was a little bit closer than we thought early in the game. Indiana led at half, 14-10. They struggled, Michael, but they pulled away. 28 points in the second half. To 10 for Indiana. Cincinnati remains undefeated. I think they've got an idle week before a huge game against Notre Dame. They had two big non-conference games to try and get their playoff path set if they were going to try and take a shot at going undefeated, maybe getting that to happen. And folks, we've got, to quote late kick Josh, Renaissance season. We might have 2007 part two after all. UCF. Losing to Louisville on Friday, 42-35. If you have not seen the end of that game, a 66-yard pick six in the final seconds gives Louisville the win over UCF. It was, that is not how you want to lose a football game. That is not how you want to lose a football game.
Especially since UCF had gotten a huge pick to stop a drive where Louisville was going down to kick a field goal to win it. UCF got a huge pick, and it looked like they were going to be able to drive down for their own field goal attempt. Next play immediately was a pick six at that point. It was just like, oh, both of those interceptions were deflections off of the receiver, so it wasn't even the quarterback's fault. And the Louisville quarterback was playing with an injury. Like, he was hobbled and was, you know, like, well, hobbling around the field. So, like, it was absolutely everything that you can ask for in a college football game, the absolute craziness, the back and forth. It was as entertaining a game as I've seen in a really, really long time. So I'm looking forward to UCF and all of our new people giving us a lot more of those entertaining games, because they were absolutely fantastic.
I am excited to walk this new conference down the aisle and wrap this thing up. I'm not even going to try and make wedding night jokes, because I don't know if that's a good way to do it.
I would say, I think we need to finalize the divorce with Oklahoma and Texas first.
Nah, like it's
we can just have them all.
Chaos. We're modern.
Props again to Kansas State on their win on Saturday, because guess what? Because they won, I won too. Got to pay out because I have a share of Kansas State. I'm enjoying my Kansas State share. It's been a successful three straight payouts. Kansas was a long-term investment again. All this happening on Symbol. It is a long-term investment, okay? Happening on Symbol.app. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to trade sports teams like stocks and earn cash payouts when your team wins or the teams that you have invested in. Symbol is blended sports and the stock market to offer you a new way to invest in and profit off your favorite teams and, again, the teams you invest in. I bought Kansas State in Kansas. I feel like I'm getting closer to my next one. I feel like I am. I'm really missing out on the fact that I didn't buy a share of Baylor when they were cheaper than they are now and could have three straight payouts already. Maybe I should have bought Baylor instead of Kansas. Maybe I should have done. Kansas was cheap. They're still cheap. I'm sorry. It just is the way it is.
I'm tempted to triple down on Kansas because they're so cheap. It's a really long-term play, but hey, come on. It's going to pay off.
Use your sports knowledge to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your team win. Symbol, as a sponsor here for the 1012 Network, has a very special giveaway that they're offering network listeners and listeners of this podcast. They're going to hold a drawing to give away two free tickets to a Big 12 game of your choice. All you have to do is sign up for Symbol, make a $25 deposit with the promo code NETWORK20, NETWORK12. You'll be entered in for a chance to win two free tickets to a Big 12 game of your choice this season. So go to symbol.app or .com. Both are the same thing. Create a free account. Poke around. Look at what you want to do. Maybe sign up for our pick three. Yeah. We're going to have weekly prizes for that stuff. I went 3-0 this week. And when you deposit, make sure to use the promo code NETWORK12 for a chance to win two free tickets to a Big 12 game of your choosing. Symbol.com, SIMBULL. Stock Market for Sports. Love having these guys as a sponsor. It is a ton of fun. I enjoy keeping track of it. I'm ready to buy another share of something. And I'm really leaning hard on Baylor. I'm going to hate to buy the Baylor one. I missed the opportunity that 3-0 start.
This is Brandon Phoenix, a.k.a. I Also Hate Pitt, joined by my brother, Jeremy J.N. Fiend Phoenix. We are the Raspy Voice Kids. We do the Raspy Voice Kids podcast. If you love West Virginia University, you will love our podcast. If you don't care about West Virginia University, you will love our pop culture segment. It begins every single episode. You can join in the fun anytime, any place. Get at your boys.
All right, let's look to the weekend coming up. We have many more conference games going on, a couple of non-conference games going on this week. Andy and Jamie, you know the rules. You can't pick your own team. So other than Kansas or Iowa State, which game this coming weekend are you most looking forward to?
I think that West Virginia, Oklahoma will be interesting just to see where those respective teams are at, see if Oklahoma pulls it together after having a really close game this past weekend, and then see if West Virginia can kind of capitalize off having a little bit of momentum, sneaking out of their rivalry game with a win. Maybe they come in there really ready to play. I'm not going to be able to watch a lot of these live because I'm going to be at a metal festival because I married a metalhead. But I'll catch up on them the next day.
So disappointed, JSJ. Come on. No. For me, it's that Texas Tech Texas game. Like, this is where we figure out which, you know, like which I guess storyline is actually true. Is Texas finally gonna get off the schneid and like finally, you know, show that they can actually live up to some of the expectations that they have? You know, did Sark really kind of change what this team is going to be doing? If they can get a resounding win against Texas Tech, like, yes, Texas Tech is expected to be one of the lower teams in the Big 12 Conference this year, but things are looking a lot better for them. They're playing a lot better. And while they've kind of had their moments, like if Texas can just obliterate them from start to finish, then I think you can start to say that maybe things are looking up for Texas and that they're going to contend, you know, for potentially that second spot. If Texas Tech can make this a really tough game for Texas, can keep it close, can find an opportunity to either get an upset or get really close to pulling an upset, then I think that makes us think that Texas Tech is a little bit better than most people are thinking that they are going to be for the year. Might give them especially if they pull off the win here. Like, I don't know what Texas Tech wouldn't be able to do then at this point, other than potentially beat Oklahoma. Like, they could be a whole lot better if they can get this one. So I think this is a big game for both of these teams, especially if either of them have any kind of, you know, designs of making it to the Big 12 championship. But I think it should be a fantastic game, especially considering what happened last year. Like, Texas Tech almost upset Texas last year, and so I'm looking for something similar super early. I would love to see this. You know, I would love to see Texas lose every single game that they have, just because I'm a spiteful, you know, Big 12 fan that's getting left behind. But you know, it's one of those things. We're going to learn a lot, I think, from this game. And so I'm excited to kind of see how it plays out.
So I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be up front right now. I'm going to be in Denver for a wedding this weekend. So just, I'm going to watch as much as I can. Okay.
Andy, you're going to have to carry this thing.
Andy's running the show next week. So I'm going to miss SMU TCU, the Iron Skillet at 11. I'm sad about that because I always think that's a neat game, despite what Parker apparently doesn't like it. But the game that I have circled is Iowa State versus Baylor, 2:30 on Fox. Because I think we have so many questions about both. Like, Iowa State's getting into conference play. This is usually when they start picking things up. They struggle in non-conference. They got their big non-conference blowout game. They always have one. It feels like they have one of those. They did at UNLV. Going on the road to Baylor. Big game to start conference play. the chance of winning the Big 12 and even, you know, maybe somehow sneaking into the playoff is still technically there for Iowa State being in the Big 12. They've got to go to Baylor, a Baylor team that's 3-0, a Baylor team that's looked good the last 2 weeks. No offense, Andy, but despite, you know, the level of competition that they faced off against, how good is this Baylor team really? Like, this game intrigues me because I want to know if Baylor is actually good. Has playing the three games they've had so far helped Baylor prepare themselves to and help Jerry Bohannon kind of get things figured out before they go into a game of this size? Like, will tents be allowed on the sideline? It's a very important question to know. Iowa State Baylor, I am like, this game is so interesting just because of all the questions I have about Iowa State and Baylor. And I want to see what questions get answered for me from this 2:30 game. I think there's good games. West Virginia, Oklahoma is interesting, but West Virginia never beats Oklahoma. It's in Norman. Texas Tech, Texas. Man, that one. That one's going to be fun. I agree that. I already called Kansas State, Oklahoma State a Big Ten game because I think that's probably what's going to be a lot of Jaylen Warren and Deuce Vaughn running the ball. So we'll see how that one goes. Iowa State, Baylor, man. That one's going to be fun. I think that one's going to be fun and really interesting. Like, really fun and interesting.
Yeah, that would probably be my second choice since I can't pick, you know, Kansas and Duke. So
I in the preseason was like, yeah, Kansas could beat Duke. Duke's terrible. Duke might not be quite as terrible as we thought they were, even though ACC go is listen garbage.
Go listen to the Rock Chalk podcast. We actually talk about that one and why that one might not be as far out of reach for Kansas as you think.
I know. Northwestern's probably just really that bad this year. Like, I think Northwestern's just bad. All right, let's wrap it up on this. Because there's so many things we could talk about, but we were already over an hour, and I don't like going over an hour because people don't want
to
listen that.
And my wife wants me to come back and watch a Chiefs game.
You probably should. All right, Andy has given us enough of his time, so let's wrap this up. Of course, give us a follow on Twitter at 1012 Network, TEN, the number 12, the word network. Give us a follow on Instagram at 1012 Pod, TEN, number 12, the word pod. You can follow me at OKTXARPoke on Twitter. Make sure you are subscribed so you don't miss an episode of the show. Leave us a rating and a review, 5 stars, please. It really does help the show out. It is doing a favor to us. And if you are a consistent, loyal listener, you like the show, easiest way to help us out is just take a few minutes and do this really easy, free thing. Check out our sponsors, Homefield Apparel, Symbol, Gridiron. Andy, where can everybody follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me personally on Twitter at AndyMitz12, or you can follow me or the Rock Chalk podcast at Rock Chalk Pod.
JSJ.
You can still find me at JSTYZ, JSTEYZ. That's on basically every platform, Twitter, Insta, whatever. I just got my wedding pictures, so I'll post those, and then I'll get back my regularly scheduled sports posting.
All right. I don't know how I made it through this. I feel like I blacked out because I've been really tired, so we're just going to wrap it up and say this was a good show. Looking forward to talking more about the 4 schools we're engaged with, and we'll be back on Thursday to make picks, and I get to gloat about my 9-1 week, and I think I'm going to gloat hard, like real hard.
Have at it. It'll be fantastic.